Buglers, we are live from Leicester Square Theatre on the 16th of September with Chris Addison and Alice Fraser. It might be our only London date of the year, so get your tickets now. Oh, get them at thebuglepodcast.com. That bit's important.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to the Bugle Ashes Zoltzcast. Today we are looking back on day three of the Lord's Test and looking ahead to day four and England's sensational victory in which they skittle Australia in the first hour and then chase down 280 to win in a mere 24.1 overs. It's going to be truly sensational. Joining me to discuss yesterday and today is producer Chris, who missed yesterday's day three play because he was doing a charity bike ride 300 kilometres for no discernible reason other than the betterment of humanity. Welcome back, Chris, and congratulations.
Thank you, Andy. I was going for Graham Gooch's 333, so tinge of disappointment. but that said, I decided not to watch it. Obviously, I had other things on, so I'm relying on you in its entirety now.
Right.
Yesterday's play, Andy.
Yep.
Fill me in.
I don't want to talk about it. I really don't want to. Nothing happened, Chris. None of it happened. It was the greyest imaginable day. It was old school cricket. Australia just ground England down. It was cloudy all day. The lights were on. It was miserable. Everyone was depressed in the ground because of England collapsing in the morning, losing their last six wickets for 47 runs. Ben Stokes out to the second ball of the day, and this, that was almost the worst thing about it, because we've become used to England cavalierly tossing their wickets away and we think, well, you know, they're not far away from mastering this if they just rein it in a bit. And then Stokes, the second ball of the day, got a nasty one from Mitchell Starc, who England, as they tend to do, had attacked really hard on day two, and he'd gone for over six and over in his first, I think it was 11 overs for 70-odd. The second ball of the day, for Stokes, it must have been like being woken up by a chainsaw-wielding crocodile. It was a vicious ball, edged and pouched by the ridiculous Cameron Green diving to his right at gully. So that was a bad start. Then Harry Brook looked like, I don't know if he'd made breakfast for himself and instead of scrambling his eggs, he'd scrambled his brain by mistake. But that seemed to be how he was batting. And we've seen the prodigious talent he has. He was on course, and he still could be on course, to be one of the fastest to 1,000 runs in Test history. He needs a 50-odd in the second innings to get there in just nine matches. But it was a bad innings on day two, and it went even worse on day three before he was caught flapping Starc to Cummins at cover. Then the tail subsided. Johnny Bairstow came in, looked pretty solid for a bit, and then just planked one to mid-on. And then, yeah, the tail just sort of disappeared. So it was pretty bleak. And then Australia grounded out, old school, at 2.5 and over. England missed, dropped a catch again, a hard one to Anderson at forward square leg off Khawaja that he probably would have expected to take. Then they got they failed to refer an LBW of Labuschagne, although they did get him out soon afterwards. But England bowled quite well. But the whole day just felt kind of grey and gloomy. And we've seen a lot of kind of pyrotechnic, kaleidoscopic, multi-hued cricket from England in the last year, but this was one of the least good days that they've had.
I am now absolutely delighted I didn't watch it.
Yeah, good move.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But can I ask, so for me, looking at it, I got the sense, and I think you imply it with Brooks's tame dismissal, you say, but you also talked about Stark bowling like something brutal. Honestly, how much was this England throwing away? How much was this Australia going in to the morning knowing that they could almost win the game if they got that session right?
It's always hard to put a kind of statistical number on that balance. It was a bit of both. Australia bowled really well. It's almost like when Lyon went off, they sort of came up with different plans and they worked and they really sort of hammered it in into the pitch. Stark was really good. Cummins bowled really well and he picked up the one wicket right at the end. And then, but they're losing two wickets to Travis Head's off spin, which is not terrible. But, you know, he's not a world beater. First class cricket averages over 60 with the ball. Bowling spin in Australian first class cricket is difficult even for specialist spinners. But even so, it was not ideal. And you know, Ollie Robinson's clearly got talent with the bat. He got 100 on his first class debut several years ago. He's had, you know, innings for England where he looks like he really should be the kind of tail ender that gets you quite regular half centuries. And he just took a massive flap at Head and was nicely caught behind by Carey Stewart Broad, who was batting in a much more restrained manner than Broadian batting tends to go, and got a really nasty hit on the jaw from a bouncer. But then he swept at Head and was out in the same over. So as Australia lost two wickets to Root, and they were sort of top order wickets, England losing two wickets to Head sort of balance that out. And you think, well, it's only tail enders, but, you know, if those tail enders just find some way to chisel out every available run, a 60 deficit is a different game from a 90 deficit. So it was really disappointing for me. And then after that, you think, well, it was perfect bowling conditions, the ball was doing quite a bit, there was lots of plays and misses, a few little edges, but they couldn't make that breakthrough, and the openers again got past 20 overs.
Can we talk about Usman Khawaja? I'd love you to tell me, is he looking like the best batter in the world right now?
Well, it depends how you define best batter in the world, in that he...
Best opener. Is, okay, how about that?
I think he's... Yeah, I think you can probably safely say that. And he is also the most throwback batter in the world at the moment. Since he came back into the Australian team, he's averaging nearly 70, but he's scoring at, I think, 48 per 100 balls. Mm. Which, I mean, might have been considered breakneck speed in the 1960s, but by modern standards, it's, you know, pretty, well, let's say steady. And it's actually slower than he scored in the first phase of his career up until he last played in 2019 and then had 2 years out of the side before being recalled only when Travis Head got COVID in Australia and came into the Sydney Test, scored two centuries. And he's played with this remarkable restraint and judgment since then. And coming to England, everyone said, oh, he doesn't move his feet properly, he's going to get caught behind, as, you know, nick off to the slips, as had happened in his previous two tours of England and happened in the World Test Final. And he has played it so late and he's judged the balls to attack so perfectly, it's quite hard to know how to get him out now while staying within the laws, not just of cricket, but also of the United Kingdom and I don't know, not breaking international law, which is obviously quite trendy here in the UK these days with our government. Without Mafia involvement, it looks tricky. He's now lasted 711 balls in the series in four innings, one of them still going on. That's more than England's four longest-lasting players between them in the series, Root, Duckett, Brook and Bairstow, in 12 combined innings. Khawaja's already faced the fourth most balls of any player after two tests of an Ashes series in England, where balls faced are available. Leading the way, Bill Brown. In 1938, Chris, in the first two tests, faced 999 balls. And I don't know if he got overexcited. I don't know if he counted balls faced. I imagine not. There weren't people with databases checking these things. But maybe somewhere deep in his brain there was a little worm that, made him panic on the 999th ball that he faced. David Boone, 724 in the first two tests of 1993. Bob Woolmer, 794 for England in 1997 in the first two tests. So Khawaja could go second on that list today. So that's basically his average innings so far this series is 91 off 237 balls. The rest of Australia are averaging 31 off 54 balls per per innings, and England 34 off 48 balls. So if you take Khawaja out, England's winning, essentially. He's personally on 281 for 3 off 118.5 overs.
Good start.
Of anti-Baz ballistics at this series. Over the last two Ashes series, the openers' collective average innings, 21 off 48 balls for both sides. That's in England in 2019 and in Australia 18 months ago. 21 off 48. Khawaja currently 91 off 237.
Wow. Okay, so the difference so far is largely Usman Khawaja. And Marnus got out yesterday, I think, for almost exactly what you described as the Australian average for this series.
Yes.
So looking to today's game, you know, Marnus with an average of 55 odd is out. David Warner, test average of 45 is out. They've got Night Watchman Steve Smith in.
Well, of course, yeah. I mean, he made his debut at Lords in 2010 against Pakistan as a number eight batter and leg spin bowler.
So you know, he's obviously up the order at four today. Wonder yeah. what could happen there. There's a couple of scenarios of how things could go today. And I raise this because the S&M cricket era, as you describe it, has made these conversations more interesting because England do strange things in the third and fourth innings these days.
They do very strange things. And also the starts of the last 2 days. On day two, Australia lost their last 5 for 77. England lost 6 for 47. I don't want to talk about it yesterday. So, yeah, I mean, it's possible, Chris. It is possible. And also, as you say, this England team, I mean, that is the first lesson of the book of Baz Baylier. Anything is possible. And this is a book that you must clasp close to your heart, particularly when you're doing the post-match interviews and you're a member of the England team or one of the England coaching staff and you have to flatly deny that anything has gone wrong. So, I mean, they could still get back into it. We thought they were out of it after day one. They ended up day two on top, and they ended up then an hour into day three having screwed that up royally. So it's possible, you know, they could, you know, bowl, if they bowl Australia out for even another 180, chasing 400 against India, Edgbaston last year, chased 378, and they didn't just chase it. They absolutely demolished it with seven wickets in hand. So, but that was, I think, probably a slightly easier batting pitch. Also had the balls from last year that went very soft. I mean, this year I think the batting conditions have been really good so far in the series, but there's still a little bit more going on. But no Nathan Lyon. You know, if they can get a good start, it's possible, but history says it's very unlikely. But that said, you know, a lot of England's biggest chases have been within the last year and a bit since S&M cricket began. So they're not totally out of it, and they do extraordinary things, but they looked very flat yesterday. And the bowling was good conditions. There were lots of false shots, lots of plays and misses, lots of edges, lots of very close LBWs. Stuart Broad's, I think, he might have done his longest ever celebrity peel, in which he ended up, I think, 5 yards past the stumps. Usually he ends up level with the batsman, or at most at the stumps. But this one, there were these strange lines that really irritated him while he was bowling. I think Cameron Green had put down to show him where to take off to try and stop bowling no balls. And he painted these lines on the ground. Broad complained about that and painted over in green paint. But actually, he ended up one of his appeals at the far end by Cameron Green's takeoff line, which I think might be a record length of appeal for... I don't know if they have tracking data on all these things. I think that would be something that we need to get in the cricket.
He must
cricket
get
data.
So tired,
the yards
Andy.
Of appeal. Well, exactly. It's adding, you know, he's, what is he, 36? you know, that's. I mean, he's adding to his step count. But I mean, the thing is, we talk about Broad getting in these spells where suddenly everything clicks and he charges in and his legs are pumping and he makes the balls do things and the wickets collapse. And basically, he did that yesterday, but he just didn't get anyone out. So he did bowl really well. He was very unlucky. Just picking up on what you said about Marnus Labuschagne, they could have had him out on 16. He would have been LBW had England referred it another fine ball by Broad. So that I'm counting that as a chance. And England got him out for just 14 more runs. He was caught for 30 off a filthy long hop. I've never seen Jimmy Anderson look less happy getting out one of the world's best players. So he only added 14, and that was a rare example in this series of Australia not punishing England for a missed chance. I've looked at the runs after chance, which I think is a stat that should come into cricket, in terms of the number of runs an individual has added after a missed opportunity. Now, clearly, that's partially relevant, but it gives a bit of an idea of how costly those misses have been, because you never know how a game would have panned out had those chances been taken. But I make it that England's batters have been reprieved 6 times and Australia's 9. That's including drop catches, wickets off no balls and unreferred LBWs. Australia have added 350 for 9 from those first drops. So I'm not counting when Alex Carey was missed 3 times. I'm just taking it from the first of those opportunities, the runs he added subsequently. England, 83 for 6. So England are averaging just under 17 added runs and Australia 38 per missed chance. And in a close-fought series where really Khawaja's batting has been the only difference, that has been another huge factor. Great. Well, that brings us to the end of today's Bugle Ashes Zoltzcast. We'll be back tomorrow, and Chris will not have spent the entire day cycling 300 kilometres around the world. How can people contribute to your fundraiser?
If they go to my Twitter feed, at Producer Chris, they'll see my increasingly delirious ramblings about what happened there, including a link.
Great. There you go. We'll be back tomorrow. May the cricket be with you. Amen.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.